Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Beach, the only place to read your emails and your tweets. It's Wednesday, June 30th. Still, this is another No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. What's up, everybody? I'm J.E. Skeets coming at you with the homie Tass Mellis.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Tassie. Got the Top Shot Hot Boy talking a little pianos before the show. Trey Kirby.
Hey-o.
Hey-o.
The international man of mystery, always taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Friends.
Yeah. And finally making the magic happen, it's JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Some of you for the second time today. We love to see it. Please smash that like button. And if you haven't, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. And oh yeah, leave a comment below the video. Help us defeat the algorithm. Keep your NBA and your non-NBA questions coming all week long. Email them in, nodunks@theathletic.com. Tweet them in, at No Dunks Inc. Also, you can leave them in the YouTube comments below. Yeah, you got a piano now in your possession, TK. You got a new house and with it comes a piano. Is that what happens?
That's exactly right. Nobody wants to move a piano, but everybody wants to have a piano. So I guess you just leave it behind because for us, it was down in the basement, and that would be the worst place you would have to get a piano from. So yeah, they left their piano behind. I got a new piano, and then you guys made me immediately feel like an idiot by saying, "What kind of piano?" To which my response was, "Wooden."
Wood.
It's a wooden one. It's a wooden one, and it stands up straight against the wall, as JD mentioned, probably called an upright piano. So whenever Pickin' and Ticklin' wants to put on a performance, come on by! Tickle the keys.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, maybe we can get Sir Foster over there. A lesson or two. Tickle the ivory. All right.
I moved my piano 5 times in the last 8 years.
Oh,
wow.
Wow.
Now you are not moving it. You are paying movers to do it, I hope.
I did not touch it at all.
Okay. Now, are you, is that an extra little tip there? That's got to be a bonus tip.
Oh,
Jesus.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Do you ever, you should have recorded their faces every time they came into your house and saw the piano.
I did. I have a picture of the first time when we lived in a second floor walk up and there were carrying, 4 guys carrying it up. And I have never heard such a stream of curse words coming from 4 grown men. It was awesome. Yeah. But now the subsequent 4 times, I literally went and hid in shame, just because.
Because they're going to take one look at you two. This guy's never f***ing playing this thing. He played it once. That's it. He was drunk. He thought he'd sit down and, like, you know, noodle a little bit. And that's it. We're moving this around. All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Good idea. Well, I can't wait for TK to master the piano. He'll have to do a performance here. But let's get to the questions. We got another great batch here, Tass.
Yeah, very solid batch. Here we go. Hey, No Dunkers. My friend and I were talking about Chris Paul and his impact when my friend brought up a crazy CP3 stat. He's been on the all-defensive team 9 times. 7 first teams, 2 second teams for you sickos that care about that kind of thing.
Yeah, thank you, thank you.
I knew he was a solid defender, but it had slipped my mind that he was voted even once to an all-defense team, let alone 9 times, including 7 straight. What's one stat that seems crazy to you? Thanks for all the laughs and good times. I've been watching you guys since the starters days, and you've made many a long car trip feel shorter and more enjoyable. Keep up the great work. That's from Luke in Newcastle, Indiana. So, Trey, a crazy stat for you.
Newcastle, Indiana. Maybe not the most famous Newcastle on planet Earth. A weird stat to me. I find it hilarious that Charles Barkley is literally the worst high-volume three-point shooter of all time. If you look at any players in NBA history that have taken 1,000 or more attempts, Sir Charles comes in dead last, 26.6% on 2,020 attempts. It's just very strange that Charles Barkley, an all-time great player, an all-time great broadcaster, happens to still be on the air during the three-point revolution when three-pointers become the most important shot in basketball and Steph Curry really revolutionizes the game to the point where you should be taking more threes if you're a good shooter, and sometimes you should be taking more threes even if you're a poor shooter. It's just very strange that of all the people to end up as the voice of the NBA during this era... It's the guy who shot three-pointers the absolute worst. We've got a couple of guys who could join him right down there at the bottom at the end of their careers. Two current players are in the bottom 10 percentage-wise with 1,000-plus attempts. Wow. You guys want to take a guess at who they are?
Oh, that's good. So 1,000 attempts. And
at least 1,000 attempts.
Oh.
These guys are both both all-stars, both high-profile players. I would say one guaranteed Hall of Famer and one Hall of Very Good guy, I would say.
Probably a big guy.
Wow, that is a good question.
Westbrook is too good for this stat. He's too high, right?
Westbrook is close. I think he's like maybe number 11 or something like that, but it's not Westbrook, though this might give away the hints a little too much. One of these guys has an MVP under his belt. In fact, he has more than one. Yes.
Giannis
Antetokounmpo, currently number 5 from the bottom, 28.7%, but I think he shot over 30% the last two seasons, in each of the last two seasons. So maybe he's able to get out of the bottom 10 by the end of his career. But, I mean, if Giannis somehow ends up as the worst high-volume three-point shooter, he will replace Charles Barkley as the weird guy for it to be dominating during the three-point era, despite the fact that he's not really making them. Who's the other guy? A fella near and dear to your hearts, Skeetzerowski and Tassington.
DeRozan.
That's right. Yeah. DeMar DeRozan, 28.1%. Wow. He is the second worst high-volume three-point shooter in NBA history. So, a couple of weird ones there, especially in Giannis. I mean, Giannis we know because, you know, we've kind of been watching him try to learn the three-pointer for his whole career. Charles Barkley, though, it's very funny that he's the guy who, like, we go to hear what he has to say about the three-point shooting revolution in the NBA. And... Well, he took a lot of them. He knows about taking three-pointers.
Did you say 2,000 career attempts from
2020, I think.
Wow, that sounds like a lot. Just sounds like a lot of attempts. I mean, that's like 150 attempts over... Wow.
Guys doing the math right now, right here on the podcast. Just
all
right,
he averaged... Well, that's weird to look at it. He only averaged 1.8 attempts per game for his career... Long career, though, obviously.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, great. That's a great one to get us started. I'll piggyback off of that because, you know, you're talking about one of the worst three-point shooters ever. I'm talking about a much better three-point shooter, but it's actually the four-point play. I love the stat that Jamal Crawford is the league's career leader in regular season four-point plays with 55 of them. 60 if you include the postseason. And you want to take a wild guess at who's second? If we just look at the regular season, all-time four-point plays, he will be going to the Hall of Fame. He's an MVP. Any guesses?
James Harden.
That's right. James Harden coming in second, but a good still, you know, basically 20 behind Jamal Crawford, which is amazing. And doing that research, I also learned James Jones completed two four-point plays in the span of 11 seconds in a game once.
Wow.
Will that ever be beat? I don't know. That seems pretty crazy to me. I think it was like 2009, I want to say. 2 4-point plays in 11 seconds. That's wild. Yeah, so those are my crazy stats. I'd add one more, a team stat that's still just like, I don't believe it's true, and I have to go check Basketball Reference every once in a while to confirm it, that the Wizards have never won 50 games. Seems so stupid to me.
Washington,
Washington.
It's pretty stupid.
Like, and I was thinking about it like, the Raptors, a team that obviously was not good for a long time, they've won over 50 games, like, outside of this, you know, shit year down there in Tampa, like, the 5 consecutive seasons prior to that. they won over 50. The Toronto Raptors and like the Wizards, like a team that's been around for a long time, has never done it, Lee. So that's another crazy one to me. There's an individual and a team crazy stat for me.
I'll jump in with Reggie Jackson, the current one. He's 31 years old. So when he got released by the Pistons last season, he thought I'd be a bit player on somebody's team. And then he showed up on the Clippers, averaged 10 points per game this season. Okay, it's probably what you expect. Skyrockets to 18 points per game this postseason. And he's hit three threes in 15 games this year, this postseason. At least three threes. The only players with more such games in a single postseason are Steph and Klay. Scorching.
That's wild.
Scorching. He's played in 18 games this playoffs. It's kind of like he's hit three threes in 15 of 17 of those games because he came off the bench to start the playoffs. And he had a poor game to start, but then he had a good game the second game coming off the bench, and he started every game since. And he gets one bad game a series where he doesn't hit those three threes. First game against the Mavs, game four against Utah, game four against Phoenix. And I bring that up because I just assume that he's going to stay hot here. He's going to stay scorching hot into game six. It kind of helps sticking with Klay and Steph in the stat department because he's had three long series. But I wonder if the Clippers can come back here. Who knows? Maybe he can surpass Steph and Klay in round number four for the most three-point shots. That's very difficult to say. But anyways, he's made three threes in 15 games. That's nuts. It is nuts to be in your 30s, turning into a different player. So good for him.
What do you got, Lee?
Well, I'm sticking with the three-point theme, and I'm going still back. This one's a bit of a crazy one. The highest scoring game ever in regular season history. It wasn't in regulation. It went to three overtimes. Was the Pistons and the Nuggets. And they went a combined 2-for-4 from downtown in a 186-184 game.
Right.
2-for-4. Now, again, I know this was a long time ago, but you would think at some point someone's like, all right, I'm just firing away here because let's just end this game. But they weren't able to do that. So I think it's still crazy that that is the highest scoring game, especially with the way, games are played these days as well, with everyone, shooting threes. And in fact, do you remember the third highest scoring game ever happened fairly recently, just over 2 years ago? I don't know if you remember.
It was a four overtime game?
Yeah, it was the Bulls down here against the Hawks. Went to four overtimes, right? They scored 168 to 161.
Okay.
And they're still 51 points short, I believe that's right, of the Nuggets and the Pistons score there back from 1983. Is that right? 23, 41, sorry, not 51. Yeah.
Four overtimes. Early on this show.
Four overtimes, though, in the current game, the way we play. And they were still so far back from that game from 1983. Like, I'm shocked we haven't had a 200-point game in the NBA at some point combined.
No, we did. Didn't we have it in the All-Star game or it got real close?
I don't even think they could get to 200. No, didn't they get to 190?
Yeah.
Will a 200-point game happen? A regulation 200-point game? That's tough. 50 per quarter?
I say no, and I know you'd be like, why? They shoot a million threes, but the big difference between that game that you said, the all-time game, is like they didn't play any defense. And actually, teams do try and play defense in today's game. So that's a big part of the equation. So I'll say no. But who knows? Maybe
200 points,
103 pointers in a game at one point. Some crazy stats there to start. Man, I hope Schumann's in the stream team. loving that segment there, or that question. Good stuff. And I just wanted to confirm, it's the Washington Wizards that have never won 50. Mm. They did do it as the Bullets. I mean, they won 60, I think, as the Bullets way back when and won a title and stuff like that. But as the Wizards, and they've been the Wizards since what? Like 96, 97?
They've been the Wizards since 98, 99.
Yeah,
season.
Yeah.
So less than the Raptors have even been around.
Yeah, we're talking, they were the Bullets, right?
Yeah. Okay.
And then they were, before that, they were in, where were they? Baltimore.
Yeah.
All right. That's a lot of the Wizards Bullets there to start the show. But we got the next question here. Hey, no Dunkaroos. Phoenix copped a bit of heat for choosing DeAndre Ayton at number one over Luka and Trey, though not as much as the Kings with Marvin Bagley III, but still. We've seen Luka and Trey become absolute beasts on the court. The Suns' reason for choosing Ayton was that he was a better fit for the team. If, and I stress if here, Phoenix goes ahead and wins the whole damn thing, does that mean they drafted correctly in 2018? Or should you always just get the best player available? That question is from Hayden. What do you think, Tess?
Hayden, I love the ingenuity, but no, sir, don't play recency bias, especially with the top picks. Especially at the top, you pick the best player. And then you start thinking, well, it could have been Luka or Trey alongside Devin Booker. Maybe we don't have a big man. Would they get Chris Paul in that light? Doesn't matter. We can play what-ifs forever. But no, absolutely not. You pick the best player. You never know what's going to happen with the rest of your roster. But I think that's just that's playing a little recency bias, and it's looking back. And you know, DeAndre Ayton's a fantastic player, and he showed, I think, not only has he become a great defensive player, but his offensive skill set has grown so much. Still, so many teams have screwed up looking at you know, the best fit for them. I think you can look at that maybe later in the draft. Maybe later in the draft in the 20s or so, the second round, you look at a 3-and-D player that you desperately need or an athletic big, because you know that the gap between that player and somebody else you draft isn't going to be that big, likely not to be that big. But even still, in today's day and age, now in the 20s, like, for example, I don't know, Pascal Siakam, he was drafted in the 20s, 27. You still should just take the guy you think is going to be the best player no matter what. You don't want to screw up. You don't want a Darko Milicic, Carmelo Anthony situation. Just take the best freaking guy and then figure out the roster. Especially now, like, it's positionless basketball. I know Ayton's a big, but like every guy can almost play every spot, I don't know. Do you guys believe in that? Well, do you guys think?
I mean, the way Hayden makes the question is like, if they win the title and Ayton is an instrumental part of that, it's not like the Phoenix Suns are going to be upset that they took Ayton at number one. And we're like, oh, damn, we just won the title. Wish we had Luka. Wish we had Trey. I mean, they're of course not going to do that. So in that sense, like, everybody's happy, I would guess. I also understand what you're saying.
No, but maybe the Mavs are upset because they didn't take DeAndre Ayton instead of Luka.
Right, maybe they win the title with them.
Yeah, what if the Hawks win the title? Are the Suns going to be upset that they didn't draft Trae Young number one? That would have been a huge surprise. But, Skeets, I think you're exactly right. This is going to be a 1984 draft all over again if the Suns do win the championship, and that makes DeAndre Ayton, Hakeem Olajuwon. The Rockets were never upset that they didn't take Michael Jordan. You would rather have Michael Jordan than Hakeem Olajuwon, but it can still work out the best for everybody involved.
Yeah. What do you think, Lee? Anything to add?
Yeah. I mean, you can go back, and there's always cases, of course, of like that, where it's like, would not take Darko number two, of course. And Hashim Thabeet's another example. You wouldn't take him number two. So it's easy to look back and say, oh, yes, we've done it right. But Luka is still the best player in that draft, and I think if you're going to redraft it, you would still take him number one because he's the best talent. But if the Suns win the championship, who cares? They've got the championship. That's all that counts. So, you know, there's arguments for both sides of it, but I would always go into the draft and say it doesn't matter to me if we're overlapping on positions. If the best talent is available, take that and then figure it out from there and trade one of them or move on. Or maybe it works out. Who knows? But you don't want to be that team that left some super talent on the table just because you already had a player in that position. I remember Carlos Boozer and Ricky Davis weren't all that high on LeBron James in Cleveland. They thought, we've already got a lot of guys who can kind of do what he does. But fortunately, the Cavs decided, you know what, we'll take LeBron anyway and figure the rest of it out.
Yeah, well, it's a fun thought experiment. It's a great question, though, Hayden. I appreciate you sending that in. It's always tough, though, like, if you have a star guard, I mean, if you believe Devin Booker was going to be your star player at the guard position, and then you have the choice between obviously a very talented wing or guard player and then a very talented big guy, you know, it's a little bit like the Ibaka Harden situation, right? With OKC, it's like they can only keep one, let's say. Now, I know there you could probably cook the books and you could keep both of them. But if you only had to pick one, they're like, well, we got a lot of guys that can shoot the ball and score. We got Westbrook, we got KD. I mean, maybe we go with the big and Ibaka, and like
they should have kept Harden.
I know
what they should have done.
But you can understand how you get to that.
I don't think you really can, because we just watched. I mean, the Warriors were a dynasty team, and they won with two great backcourt players. Dwayne Wade and LeBron were the basis of the Heat championship teams. Kevin Durant and Steph Curry were the next version of the Warriors. Two perimeter players seems to be the recipe right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't want to stand up for OKC's decision. Harden definitely wasn't that player at that point that he's become, like an MVP and all that. So they're like banking on like, or they're trying to decide like, well, who's going to be the better player? And if we consider them equal, then let's go with the big because we got guards. But yeah, he turned out to be one of the greatest offensive players I've ever seen. So they would They would like to have him on the team, I'm sure. I would have liked to keep him over Ibaka. Though, Serge Ibaka, great player.
NBA champion.
Great player. So I heard Bill Simmons say, he thinks Ibaka is going to go into the Hall of Fame. I was like, whoa. And he's like, well, think about it. He's an international guy. And these guys like get a little bump that way. I was like, eh. I was like, I'm not so sure about that one, Tass. Ibaka, Hall of Famer? I know we do this with a lot of guys, but he does not scream that to me right now. Does Simmons got a point, though? He's like, so? You'll look back. He'll have, obviously, a decent run with Spain and what he's done in the NBA. Has a title. Will have some decent, you know, accumulated numbers. What do you think?
I say no.
Yeah.
You can't just put every guy just because he's got a different flag beside his name into the Hall of Fame. You know, and did he really have a great run with Spain? I mean, he's a backup player.
No,
he didn't. He didn't make much of a... many waves there. I mean, I love him. I adore him as a supporting player, but it was fun saying Serge Ibaka for a long time, and it would be great if he was on the floor right now with the Clippers. But I guess the Suns would rather have Serge Ibaka than Chris Paul. I don't know. I mean, he could just do this forever, and like they have Chris Paul now. Isn't Luka Doncic a ball handler? Isn't Chris Paul dominating the ball there? Like. Mm. You get ball handlers because they're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, fair enough. But look, again, if they win the title this year with Ayton as their big guy, they're going to be like,
right.
Awesome, we nailed it, we got him. Who cares, we got a championship. How many you got, Luka and Trey? Oh, none? Oh, okay, we're winning right now. But yeah, a fun question, Hayden. Gets us going, gets a mind thinking about different things, different what-ifs. The butterfly effect, Trey Kirby. What if that piano's never there in that house? You would never go on to become a world pianist. It'd be amazing. All right, we got lots more questions to get to here, but let's take our first break here.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Tass, before we get to the next question here, I did look up Ibaka's old basketball reference page, you know, to see the accolades. So Simmons had a case here. You know, he's got the international angle, but does he have the NBA accolades? I don't think so. Yeah, he's got the title. 3-time all-defensive player. That's it. He's a block champ. He's a block champ.
What's his career averages like?
Yeah, it's not as high as I even thought.
10-7?
It's 11 and almost 7 if you want to round up. Mm. Call it 11-7. Excuse me. I was looking at this year. 12-7 and let's call it 1 career. He hasn't played 1,000 games. Maybe he's over 10,000 points. I bet he's close. Yeah, he's just over 10,000 points. It's not going to be enough because he doesn't have many years probably left in him. So, Hall of Very Good for Serge Ibaka. Confirmed.
3-time all-defensive team.
Yeah. That's fine.
That's about it.
Yeah, that's it.
Block champ. Do you count the block champ as an accolade?
Cool, but no.
Cool. I agree.
I don't know. I guess maybe I had thought he had made one All-Star game, as an injury replacement.
Close,
yeah, but doesn't even have that under his belt. Okay. Anyway.
Hall of Very Cool as well.
Very cool.
I mean, bring he is like every game on the sideline. The bucket hats right now. He looks cool as shit.
Yeah, he must have stocked up on bucket hats before the playoffs started because it feels like he's had a different bucket hat for every single game. He just decided, I'm going for a cool guy Inspector Gadget look for the entirety of the playoffs, and it's working for him. Like Tass is saying, maybe the Hall of Very Good is fine for Serge Ibaka, but the Hall of Very Cool, I think, is kind of where he belongs even more. He has an underrated dunk contest appearance. Like, he dunked from the free throw line as an almost 7-footer. That's pretty impressive. He did that weird one where he jumped, took the thing off the rim with his teeth, and then dunked it. Only he botched it the first time, so it wasn't as exciting. He had the OG Anunoby clip with the scarves, you know, the whole walking in stuff. He's done a lot of stuff around the NBA besides his basketball playing that is very cool. So I got him in that hall, no doubt.
Okay, good.
Yeah, he's a chef. Serge a bucket hat. Let's get that nickname. Okay. Basketball reference. All right, next one. Hi, guys. Longtime listener since the Jones days. Thank you for listening. Been watching you guys on YouTube recently and been wondering why Lee looked so familiar. Is he actually former Finnish hockey player Teppo Numminen in disguise?
What? Doesn't look like him.
Are you Teppo Numminen?
I thought that was Steve Coolius at first.
Yeah. Canadian broadcaster Steve Coolius. Yeah, I can see that for sure. Teppo Numminen, if you're watching on YouTube here, what a name. Former hockey player, former Finnish hockey player, played with the Jets, got around the Coyotes. Anyways, it's not really an identical match for Lee.
No.
But
Maybe put some glasses on him. I'd love to see Numminen wearing some glasses, but I don't see it.
I think it was a bit of a force to form a question here from this Finnish viewer. I get it. Nice to see Lee, a.k.a. Teppo, enjoying a new career. Which leads me to my question. Which player would benefit from a change of scenery this summer? Cheers. That's from Antti, another great name. Teppo is a great name. Ooh. Antti, another great Finnish name. So, Lee, a guy needs a change of scenery.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to take the low-hanging fruit on this one. I'm choose one of my star guys. It's Bradley Beal. I'd like him to move on. I just think he would benefit. He just turned 28 the other day, and I think he's kind of wasting away in Washington because they ain't close to a championship. And he was All-NBA this year. He was an All-Star. He nearly led the league in scoring, but he's a star player just being not utilized as best he could in Washington, or not in a situation where he could actually have some postseason success. And I would like him to just say, you know what, I've done my time, I've put in here, I've tried hard, because he's no question he's battled, but the organization hasn't put a team around him that has been able to, you know, really get close to competing, and I just don't really trust that they can do that. And so I don't want Beal to be sort of like 32 or 33 and then decide, okay, now I'm going to sort of hitch myself to another team where he's not one of the dominant players. He's more kind of riding some coattails there. So I'd like him to find a new team. I'd like him to be on a situation where it's like, man, he actually, now we're seeing him in the playoffs having some success and potentially, you know, competing for a championship. Because I mean Washington had a sort of crazy finish to the season here, you know, but that was like more just fun. No one really thought they could do anything other than at best get out of the first round, but even that was a stretch. And you have to wonder where they're going from here. I mean, Westbrook, again, finished the season well, but that's not really the future there. I think they...
You're saying finish a lot. Are you, Teppo?
Teppo, no.
Okay, who would you be? You'd be Teppo
boy. Maybe it's just because I've got the hair slicked back these days. Maybe that's what he's referring to.
Yeah, you got a hockey vibe
to,
going
but
on right now.
Take off your glasses. This might help, actually.
Hey, man, take off your glasses. I thought that was you, man. You almost got busted. I did get busted. Little Beverly Hills Cop 2 for anyone out there watching.
You look exactly like Teppo Numminen. So anyway, I see more now though.
Yeah. You'll like this, Lee. You love you too. Teppo Numminen looks like Bono.
There's the locks. Bono.
Teppo with his hockey hair looks like Lee with his hockey hair. I gotta admit that.
That's where it's coming from, definitely, the head there. He looks like a predator. Is that right there, Tassie? That's a saber, isn't it?
He's a sabre.
Yeah. Was he any good, Teppo?
I thought you literally meant he looked like a predator, like stalking, like, I don't know, young
Nashville
kids or something.
Predator.
Like, that's
Nashville,
weird, man.
Yeah.
That's like, we're saying you look like him.
Yeah, you had the wrong Timu there, Lee.
Timu Solani.
Yeah, both Finns.
Yeah. God, I've got some cool names of Finns, actually, don't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've never heard a bad one. I think about it.
I don't like Tuukka Rask.
Oh, okay.
Is he finished? I don't know.
You said low-hanging fruit. I thought you were going to take your countryman. Ben Simmons needs a change of scenery. We don't need to go long on this. My God, get him out of Philadelphia. Put him on any other team. And we've had a trade proposal from every team, so we can make it happen. He just needs to get out of there. We've moved on from the Embiid and him experiment sort of as the two stars or all stars and stuff like that. Let's get him anywhere else. I'd be excited to see him wherever it is, like be it Minnesota, be it Portland, be it wherever. But that's my answer, Trey.
Yeah, I think Ben Simmons and CJ McCollum is a guy that I think is kind of in the same thing here. But for me, CJ McCollum is almost where Ben Simmons it was prior to this NBA season, where, I mean, we don't know if the Trailblazers are going to run it back with Dame and CJ, but if they do, it's not going to be Dame who takes the downfall for the Portland Trailblazers. You know, CJ McCollum had a great start to the season. He got injured, but despite the fact that he has been an all-star caliber player, he's never been an all-star next to Damian Lillard. And eventually people are just going to start saying, hey, the Blazers didn't put enough around Damian Lillard, despite the fact that everybody likes CJ McCollum, thinks he could be an all-star and probably would be in the Eastern Conference. So I kind of want to see CJ get traded before people start coming at him as the scapegoat for the Trailblazers' problems. And, you know, keeping it finished here, somebody should take a chance on Lauri Markkanen. He's going to have a long career in the NBA, but it's not going to be with the Bulls, I don't think. That being said, he shot 40% from three last year. Sometimes he looks like a Porzingis Jr. out there, where he's going to be a 7 foot tall shooting guard, but that's a valuable thing to have if you didn't necessarily draft him seven and he's the big return when you trade Jimmy Butler.
It's a good one. Who do you got, Tess?
Good ones there. I went deep to a guy that we haven't seen in a long time, Buddy Hield of the Sacramento Kings. It's time to move on, I think, for two reasons. First, you got to start Tyrese Halliburton at some point. And yeah, you can say, hey, we'll start De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton, and Buddy Hield, I guess. But I don't think you want to do that, number one. Number two, Buddy Hield, I think, is just run out of time there in Sacramento. I mean, it's done. I think he would be best in a winning program. We saw him go to the bench two seasons ago for a chunk of games because he wasn't playing hard enough. I think a guy who is a great three-point shooter, shooting over 10 threes a game this past season. He's a perfect modern-day player, shooting over 40% for his career. I think he would just get the most out of him, playing around good players. I think they would bring the most out of him. And you guys talked about age, and Buddy is 28, and I think that includes a year that he acquired when he was at Oklahoma. So he's been around for a while. It's five seasons now. He played at Oklahoma for a long time. An additional year there because he got old. But it's time to move on, especially because you want to play Halliburton. I don't think you want to play all those three guys together. Buddy's too good to just be hanging out. I think he'll just get peeved if he's there another year or two, and he just won't get the most out of himself. So he could be a great player on a good team, but not a great player on a bad team.
No. Fun question, though. So let's hear your answers, guys, in the stream team, and leave them in the YouTube comments below. Which player would benefit from a change of scenery this summer? Our next question from Monty in Minnesota. What up, No Runners? I enjoyed the discussion on this past Friday's drop about one of the classic Olympic events everyone needs to catch. Race walk. As it so happens, my buddy and former college track and field teammate will be competing in the illustrious 20K race walk at the U.S. Olympic trials here on Saturday morning, or past Saturday by the time you guys read this. Anyway, I've always thought it's funny that the most successful athlete I am friends with happens to compete in one of the funniest and most random sports. That's so true. So I'd like to know, which people in your lives are super impressive at what they do, but the thing they do is just kind of odd? Lace them up, swing those thighs, walk them. That's from Monty, Minnesota. I hope that's like the race walk motto that they say before every race. Lace them up, swing those thighs, walk them. Good, fun question though, Trey. Does anyone come to mind?
Well, first of all, I would like to turn a question back towards Monty. He mentions that his buddy was a former college track and field teammate. I'm assuming that this buddy who is now going to be in the race walking Olympics events was a race walker back in college. Maybe. But I would be curious to know if race walkers are also good runners. Like, does that translate at all? I mean, obviously the runners are going to be specialized. The best runners are going to be there. But if you're a college runner, does that automatically make you an Olympic quality race walker? Monty, let us know.
I mean, stamina is a huge part for sure. And the mental,
Yeah, I mean, maybe you don't run fast enough for the Olympics, but you're still fast enough to be a college runner. Is that Olympic speed walking? Right. I don't know. Let us know, Monty.
So you're saying, do you think that the people that come race walking champions, let's say, or the elite, were like good but not great runners. And they were like, well, I'm not going to make it in running this distance, but hey, let's try walking. And maybe that's probably, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, you know, like maybe you're not a starting pitcher in baseball, but you're an excellent relief pitcher.
Yeah.
I don't know. So, Monty, let me know. I got some questions about race walking and the body types needed for it. As for answering this question, my sister, she's really smart. She's very successful in her professional life, a director of global recruitment at a major English second language school. I should probably take a course. That, though, is not odd or surprising. She went to school for education and foreign language. She should be doing something like that. But apparently she's also a straight-up baller in the British royal family look-alike trade. She's building an empire with replicates and mirror Megs. It was one Instagram, then it was a second Instagram, then it was an online store, then it was a brick-and-mortar store. Suddenly, she's making Princess Diana sweatshirts. My dad cares about the royal family now. We almost had a crossover this week, me and Mackenzie, because she saw a notification come up on her podcast feed about Middleton's breakout game. She said, try! Is this podcast episode about Kate Middleton? If so, I'm listening. Unfortunately for her, this one was about Chris Middleton. From Chris to Kate, the Middletons were dominating the Kirbys this week. But we should honestly ask my sister to do something for the NBA, like low-cost tunnel fits. That's what she does. She goes to a thrift store, and she finds things that, like, you know, Kate Middleton would be wearing to Wimbledon or something like that. Obviously, Kate Middleton is spending $15,000 on her skirt. Kenzie is finding one for $15 that looks the exact same. You can replicate it yourself.
Wow.
Let's do that with Serge Ibaka.
Yeah, bucket hats.
Show me the $10 version of his Gucci bucket hat. Show me the cool version of his trench coat that I can go across to Ragarama and pick up.
Great idea.
There's a market.
Yeah, for sure. There's something there. I love it. Yeah, I've always, you know, I think I follow Mackenzie, or at least on Facebook. And I remember over like the last couple of years, just started seeing so many things about the royal family.
I know.
Like, wow.
Man.
I was like, what's going on here? My mom is like one of those diehard, like, royal family fans. Like, those people are, they're so into it. My mom included.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's
exactly.
Old school.
My mom was old school into it, too. I didn't know my sister was into it at all, but obviously she is. I've been following her on Instagram, but it was very weird. Like, the last time I was with my dad and my sister at the same time, hearing how much my dad knows about the royal family, I'm like, come on, man.
Wow.
It was weird enough for me when you suddenly started liking hockey in your late 50s, but now you're getting into the royal family in your 60s. What's going on, Steve?
Wow. That's fantastic answer. Going family with this. I hear family's important when it comes to Fast and Furious, so he's already starting that up.
That's right.
Lee, do you have an answer for this?
I don't. Mine's the complete opposite taste and tone. One of my old friends, Tomo, I think I've told you about him before. He's really good at being really disgusting, he's really good at vomiting just on in really funny situations when he's been drinking. He used to do this back in the day. Like
Classic Tomo.
Like, he used to just drink. Like, he's one of those guys who can drink and just, like, pour it down his throat. Some people can do that. I can't do that. It's a skill. But he's really gross at doing that, and then just, like, did it one time
gross.
He drank this vodka and orange and then just vomited it all straight back up and put it back
he's not trying to do it, right? Like, he's accidentally puking.
He has trouble keeping it down. But there's been a few other instances. He was sort of getting into a fight with this guy, and they sort of started scuffling, and he grabbed him around the throat. Projectile vomited on this guy. It was a pretty good defense mechanism, because the guy's like, oh my god, get out.
That's disgusting.
And then there was another time where a bouncer was throwing him out of a nightclub, and he was grabbing him, and he sort of grabbed him by the back of the neck, and he
just puked everywhere.
And that's the thing, but as soon as you puke, everyone's like, oh, get out of here, I don't want anything to do with this guy. Oh man, yeah, it was hilarious.
Those are two definitely different types of answers.
No. Wow. You replicated it, man.
You say you call him Tomo, though, not Vamo? Mm.
Ah, yeah. Maybe that's a good...
You've never thought of that, Lee? Oh, that's so good.
There's a few more in the chamber, but there. I'll leave those ones out. I think I've covered enough.
Let those slosh around a little bit before we share those.
You guys, have you seen these pitchers vomiting on the mound? It's happened twice this month. Like, two pitchers, because it's so hot outside.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're getting overwhelmed and dehydrated. Yeah. One just happened, and they're just, like, just barfing all over the mound, like, in between pitches. There's a great breakdown on John Boy's channel right now. Kevin Durant is sitting, like, right behind the umpire, watching a pitcher from the Reds just puke his guts out.
Oh, man.
KD plays it pretty cool, to be quite honest. He's just like, all right. Saw that at a Hawks game once.
Wow.
I hated the headlines of watch Kevin Durant. Watch his reaction to the pitcher puking. He doesn't do anything.
No, he's like,
well, I'm telling you to watch it. His reaction is nothing. I guess that's the...
No, the puke was good. I mean, Kevin Durant's taken in baseball games. He went to Citi Field and he went to Yankee Stadium. He's just taking it all in. Yeah. No, that puke did not compare at all to that lady at the Hawks game that we used to show on our show over and over and over again. That was the baseball one. Was just I thought he held it in pretty well. There's no Tombo. He just dropped it.
No,
you know? Dropped it. Got out of the way. I guess he was respectful to the game, to the history of baseball, because he got off the mound. No puke on the mound.
That's right. That's nice. Just on the grass. Like, of all the sports to puke, baseball, you got a lot of room. A lot of grass. I mean, it's a hell of a lot better than basketball.
Definitely.
You're
going
to puke it inside. Yeah. No one wants to smell that. So I guess
nobody stepped on that puke, I don't think. I mean, there's lots of parts of the grass where no one will ever step on throughout a game. Nobody steps behind the mound. Nah.
Pretty safe.
Pretty safe.
That's awesome. I don't have an answer for this, Tash. Do you got one? Someone that does something pretty crazy?
I mean, I'm always impressed with hula hooping. Always. Any sort of hula hooping. Skeets, remember you were able to jump through a hula hoop vertical, you know, when somebody tries, you know, kind of throws it and puts backspin on it, brings it back to them, you know, it's upright.
Yeah.
You were able to go directly through one, if you remember.
Yeah, I mean, that's a skill. Yeah, that was a long time ago. Yeah, and it was moving. Yeah, it's like that's... where you flip the hula hoop and it spins back, like Tass said. It took me a couple tries, though, to, like, cleanly get through it, like a dog jumping through a hoop or a mascot jumping through fire. that didn't go so well that one time in that Hornets-Spurs game. But, yeah, thank you. I'm your answer?
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I'm surprised in gymnastics where we have the floor routine. There's not – I guess there is, like, some hula hoops. Like, they use them.
Yeah, there's floor exercises maybe, don't they?
Yeah, a little bit. I think. But I would, you know, put it around the waist. Do some spins. I love a good hula hoop.
All right. Me too. I don't have one. Your kids have one?
No.
Oh, interesting.
Anybody else? Anybody is doing some belly twirls out there recently?
Sebastian's tried it, like, you know, birthday parties and stuff, but it's hard to get it right. It's hard to get the sort of, you know, what's the...
Just the motion going?
Yeah.
I was too slow.
Yeah,
I can tell the way you're doing it way too slow. Keep that thing up. I don't know if we have any current hula hoops. That's one of the things that, like, a hula hoop will just show up at your house. You're like, I guess we have a hula hoop now, and then suddenly it's gone. I've never been able to. I don't know. Just the timing of it ain't good for me.
Do you go front to back? Are you doing circles, or what do you do?
Yeah, well, of course, it's just getting it going, and then you don't need to move that much.
Uh-uh.
That's the thing. You just, you're letting sort of gravity do the work there, or just the momentum shifting back and forth. I can do it, or I could do it. I haven't done one in a long time. And then you see people that can do like 10 of them at once, like at some weird like concert or festival. You're like, oh, look at her go. She's got a bunch of hula hoops going. It's mesmerizing if you're on the right stuff, I guess. But I've never tried that. Never tried the neck and stuff like that on the head.
I guess I'm on the right stuff because I love it. I've been going to parks recently. I see hula hoop groups. They're like, they like show up at the park to hula hoop together. Just throw down their stuff and just get it on.
Mm. All right. Well, I'm going to go buy one. I'm going to go buy one just to impress you.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Do it. Yeah, that was probably at least 10 years ago. So it's time, Skeets. It's time. All right. Next one. Hey, yo. I feel like I have to share my experience about milk drinking with you guys. Just like Mr. Skeets knew exactly when he had had his most recent glass of milk, so do I. It was a few days after New Year's, and my sister and her friend were drinking glasses of milk. However, there was more than just milk in their glasses. The glasses contained milk and Malibu, an alcoholic M&M. I had to try it, and to my amazement, it tasted great. Except I vomited everywhere. No, I just added that in. It tasted great. This might be a well-known concoction, but I had never heard of it. My question, when did two or more substances or people, etc., that seemed completely at odds with each other join forces to surprise you in a positive way? Keep up the good work. A short-suffering Bulls fan with long-suffering potential, Connor in Ireland.
Well, I have shared this answer to this question where, you know, you put a bunch of things that seem odd together, but it works. I've said this before. It's the ultimate stoner snack. For some reason, it came about, these three things, these three items that you would never think to put together, and then you try it, and it's delicious. And it is a graham cracker, some brie cheese, and a ketchup chip. And I know what you're thinking, listening. If you haven't heard me say this before, you're saying that sounds disgusting. That sounds like I'm going to puke like I'm Tomo. Give it a go. I'm telling you, those flavors, they just work, man. It's incredible. So that's my answer. Those are three really random things. But I shout out to our man D for playing an instrumental part in that coming together, I remember. I think Jay was involved, probably a Ken too. But yeah, graham cracker, brie, and a ketchup chip on top.
Yeah.
You got every flavor. You're hitting every flavor note, TK. I'm telling you.
You are. You definitely are.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's honestly the graham cracker that's throwing me off the most. The graham cracker base. I feel like that's gonna be overpowered. Graham cracker plus brie doesn't make sense to me. Brie plus chip. Sure.
Right.
Chip plus cracker. A bit of a hat on a hat, if you're asking me, but brie with graham cracker. I don't know.
Try it. Hey, everybody, just give it a go, and then come back to me and say, you'll come back and thank me and the guys. You'll be like, wow, that's incredible. You guys should market this. You should sell this, because it just works. It's amazing. It's amazing.
The fourth ingredient, I think, is water. You need water. It sounds a little dry.
Yeah, it's not. No, the brie's helping you, man. You get a nice brie there. Yeah, and that's it. It's the binding agent between the two, right? It's a nice.
I'd buy it.
Yeah. The caulk, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
Some late night caulk with the boys.
Anyway, give it a go. People are calling it the Canadian stream team. Yeah, we got to come up with a name. Yeah, people are asking warm brie or melted brie. Sure. Yeah, I think ours was room temperature, but it probably been sitting out for a while. It was gooey, no doubt. All right, good luck. Anybody else?
Did you say Ken was potentially involved with the creation of this?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, well then now I'm going to trust it because Ken's involved in my answer. He once convinced me to eat a hot dog in the morning. I was like, this sounds ridiculous to me. I was a bit like JD with Caesars, you know?
Right.
You got to have a PM on the clock to eat a hot dog. But we ate those hot dogs. Why are we eating hot dogs for breakfast every day? It's perfect. It's just an encased meat. It's no different than, like, having a sausage in the morning. But you need those people to think outside of the box, think outside of the bun. Have a hot dog in the morning. You won't be disappointed.
Yeah, it's a great point. Why are we totally fine with a breakfast sausage in the morning? But like you brought up, if I were to plate you some eggs, some hash browns, and a hot dog, you'd be like, oh, what the hell?
Is this a hot dog?
It's not that much different. That's a good one. Ken knows. This is the same guy that would keep like a bucket of KFC under his bed when he was in college. Now that I can't recommend. That's probably very dangerous. But anyway, Tess, you got an answer for this?
I got a stoner answer as well. It's it's a sweet and salty combination.
Okay.
It's tortilla chips dipped in a jar of Nutella.
Mm.
It works.
Yeah.
I mean, Nutella is just freaking good.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if you're having s'mores, Nutella is the way to go. Get rid of the chocolate and just, you know, so you don't have to deal with all the the fire part, or just don't have to deal with melting the chocolate part, you know? Roast that mallow, but then throw in a little Nutella. Anyways, I'm just off of s'mores. And it just angers me thinking about
it. I didn't know you were ever on them.
Oh, I'm always on them, man. Okay. No, it's just, it happens a lot. You know, there's a lot of fires around, so I'm s'moring it. The graham crackers are just too dry these days, especially the ones you go in a grocery store. They're just sitting there for years. I feel like they have been sitting there forever. So that's my problem, is there's too much cracker. And that's why I was a little bit skeptical of the ketchup chip with a brie and then the graham cracker.
Yeah, well, I'm just not talking. Yeah, we're not building this thing, this stoner snack, with like one you would use for a s'more. I mean, that's too much. Yeah, like go smaller with your graham cracker. Mm. Like these are little like these are beautiful little appetizers that you could serve at a party on a tray. Walk around. Think small. Think like little delicious bite-sized.
More like some less, not some.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Yeah. We could roll with that too. Okay. All right. Lee, do you have anything?
Well, sticking with the food theme, remember the No Season Required tour after the Oakland show? I think Mark Spears was the one who suggested, let's go out for some fried chicken and waffles.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking like...
You had never heard of that.
Heard of it. And I thought, he's joking, isn't he? Like, one's late night dinner, one's first thing in the morning for breakfast. And went out, tried it, and gotta say, wasn't too bad.
Right.
Wasn't too bad at all. But thought he was messing around. I thought he was like, roast chicken and waffles. That's a great combination. Turns out it's a thing. Turns out it's not too bad.
Roscoe's, right?
Was it? Yeah.
Did we go to Roscoe's?
By the train tracks.
Yeah, it was right near the train tracks.
It was definitely by that.
Yeah, yeah.
I just couldn't remember if it was an actual Roscoe's, but you're probably right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Oakland there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Eric Freeman was there. Chowing.
It was late night, too. You're right.
Yeah.
Super late night. Were you concerned it was going to be too heavy for you at that late at night?
It just didn't. No, it wasn't. That it was
no,
just
you
more
just
like,
never heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought waffles is what you wake up to, like pancakes. And fried chicken was just like, I'm just like, I don't know how those two go together with maple syrup.
Hold on. I got an idea. What about a little hot dog on your waffle?
Well, how about this hot dog wrapped inside of a pancake? The breakfast, what's that called? What is it called when you put a
pig in a blanket?
Pig in a blanket.
Yeah, yeah.
Dog in a pancake?
Dog in a pancake.
The morning.
Dog in a cake. All right, there's some great, again, stoner stacks for y'all of you out there.
Okay, yeah, you want to have a successful dinner party. Serve all these hors d'oeuvres to your guests. See what they say.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Few more questions here before we wrap this up. What's up, layup lovers? Who is your favorite player that had an amazing 2 to 3 year stretch and then just fell off? Maybe it was due to injury, or maybe they just stopped being as effective. My mind instantly goes to Gilbert Arenas. And as a Bulls fan, Ben Gordon had a stretch where he could score on anybody. Interested to hear who comes to mind for you guys. Thanks. That's from Adam in Nashville. Maybe he's a Predators fan, Lee. But Tess, you answer this one first. A favorite player that just was like awesome for a 2 to 3 year window.
In Nashville, I'm sticking in Tennessee with this news about Penny Hardaway sticking to stay in Memphis and coach there after flirting a little bit with the Orlando Magic and their head coaching position. I'm going with Penny back in the 90s. It's a little bit of a cheat because obviously he fell off because of injuries. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a little like Grant Hill, that kind of thing. But Penny obviously was so good. And he could have been Magic with Shaquille O'Neal. Yeah. Pun intended. The first injury slowed him down. He was 27-4, and then he came back. And then he was still good. You know, he's still around like 16, 17 points a game. And then the second injury slowed him even down more. And then he was just sort of a role player after that. He's a little Sean Livingston-esque after that. But damn, he was phenomenal to watch. He was, you know, it's not a Gilbert Arenas, which is a really good one, where he was on top of the league and then just kind of flamed out. Injuries stopped Gil too. But yeah. Penny was, yeah, he was just more special than anything.
Who do you got, Trey?
I actually love the mention of Ben Gordon. I think that's a solid one. Aaron Brooks is another guy to me that is a strange one to look back at his career. He was 2010 most improved player, averaged like 19.9 points per game. Not bad. He was the sixth player in NBA history to make over 200 threes, over 400 assists in a single season. He did it before Steph Curry. But Aaron Brooks was just kind of a little guy, so his career didn't last for a super long time, kind of moved into the super sixth man role eventually. But Aaron Brooks was like an early Rockets guy that they kind of just cut loose and say, run a ton of pick and rolls, shoot the ball a lot. It worked out for Aaron Brooks. Maybe it was a bit of a proof of concept to say, hey, we're going to become a pick and roll team here in the future. Eventually they got James Harden. We know the rest of that story.
Mm-hmm. Lee?
Mine's probably just a touch more than that. It's the 4 to 5 years. But it's a guy who I know Trey loves and I love as well. It's Joakim Noah, really. I mean, he had 5 seasons there where he was really good. Made the All-Star game twice. Defensive player of the year. Finished 4th in MVP voting 1 season. That's just how good he was. But then it pretty quickly fell off, actually, after that second All-Star game. He was only 28. And then, you know, he really tailed off after that. Dropped his average to below 10 points a game, and obviously then he was traded, or didn't trade, he was signed as a free agent by the Knicks. That certainly didn't work out. Had a cup of coffee with the Grizzlies last year and then the Clippers, but you know, he for a couple of years there he was a really, really good player. But really, it was just a 4 or 5 year window that he was really good. These first couple of seasons he wasn't all that special, he was okay, but you know, he then sort of found a way to be effective without having the prettiest shot in the world. Came really good, but then kind of just drifted off, unfortunately. So I'm going to go with Noah.
Okay. I got really into basketball in the mid-90s. A big part of it was playing fantasy basketball, again, with my buddy Ken, way back in the day, just, you know, going into high school and doing it ourselves. This was like sort of pre-internet, pre-Yahoo Sports and ESPN and all that. You had to do it manually. And I just remember two players that were like really good bigs for like a 3 to 4 year window, like right at that time, were one, Vin Baker, who was like an all-star for like 3 or 4 years. I think 4 years he made it in a row. Three with Milwaukee, and I think one with Seattle. He was awesome, especially as a fantasy player, because he gave you like a steal and a block too, and he was like a 2010 guy. And then another guy who I just checked, and I was like, what? He only played 4 years in the NBA? Dino Raja.
Celtics,
yeah, and never made an all-star game, but like flirted with 20 points per game and was like a, you know, halfway decent sort of late-round fantasy pick. So he only played, like, again, 4 years, I think it is, for the Celtics there. He came over later. He's Croatian. He's in the Hall of Fame. Maybe Bill Simmons is onto something. That's because, of course, because of his international play. But yeah, those two guys, Dino Raja and Vin Baker. And I know Vin, like, of course, like, he struggled with alcohol and all that later in life. But he was awesome at the start of his career. Mm-hmm. So those are my two guys.
Great stuff. Last email here, guys. No Funks Crew. I have been a longtime fan and have always looked for opportunities to recommend you to fellow basketball sickos. I work for a health system in Southern California, and our CEO and I are big Clippers fans. I have told him about the podcast many times, but he still hadn't checked you out until today. We were driving to a meeting, and I turned the volume up because you were playing in the background. I gave a confident, "You will love these guys," and was excited for him to hear your show. Uh-oh. After 5 minutes, he slowly turned his head towards me and gave me a "what the hell are we listening to?" glance of confusion. I told him you guys don't usually spend 7 minutes debating who the most handsome trade was of all time, debating between Kemba Walker and Al Horford or Ricky Rubio and Kelly Oubre, but it was of no use. My stamp of approval was rendered useless. When was the time you tried hyping something up only to be left looking like an idiot? P.S. We did turn it back on later, and he ended up enjoying the show.
Hey, nice.
Deuces. Steven. Thanks for sending that in, Steven. Thanks for the reco.
Yeah.
Steven, really appreciate it.
Yeah. Sorry we let you down there for 7 minutes talking about handsome guys in NBA history. But let's be honest, that's sort of the show, too. There's a lot of that, as you can just tell from the last hour of this Beach Steppin' podcast. But this is great timing with this question, Tass. I think I maybe slipped this answer in at some point during the last couple of weeks, but Trey and I sort of made a surprise appearance on the Club Top Shot live stream, their own podcast. They're in the Top Shot world, and they have a lot of fun, those guys, Pete and them and Jack. And we've been debating or going back and forth, like some little friendly banter of like, oh, we should play a game against each other, right? And they were talking a little trash, so Trey and I jumped on. Again, we surprised, and we're like, ah, yeah, we're ready. Yeah, we'll try and make this happen. Now, I don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately, for us in Vegas this year, but we'll get to it one day. But I'm talking up our team, our squad. You know, Lee Ellis, he's a sharpshooter. You know, he's an incredible three-point shooter. This guy's lights out. He's worked with Steph Curry, Kyle Korver. And, like, while I'm saying all of this, Pete is, like, searching, because it's a live stream, like, on the internet. And he's like, okay, he's typing in Lee Ellis, three-point shot. And he pulls up a clip, and he's like, well, is this him? And we're like, yeah, that's him. Yeah, here we go. And then it starts playing. And at first, I'm like, oh, yes, sweet. Mike, look at this guy. Cash, two cash. And then it really quickly goes downhill to the point where I was like, oh my God, I don't remember this one. Like, this was really badly. So I'm like, again, had just been talking you up for 10 minutes, and then he's playing this clip, and everybody's like, probably going like, what the hell is Skeet smoking? Like, this guy stinks. Like, E-Dog? Like, what the hell is he wearing? He's not even shooting an NBA 3. Like, airball that one. Anyway, so... yeah, I didn't look good there, and yeah, I literally had to do the whole thing where I was like, just look at any other Lee Ellis 3-point video, because they're all better than this.
Yeah, not this one,
But anyway,
blame it on the sleeves, three. Mate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, pre-bar 3 days. That was it. That's when I realized.
Oh, man, this is
got to get on bar 3. Yeah. God, look how slow it is, too. Like, come on, man. JD, did you slow this down on purpose or what?
So, Lee, just for those, those listening, we are showing a clip from 2014.
Yeah, it was the first season, yeah.
First try Super at dumb. The three-point contest. Is that right, Lee?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Okay, it didn't go well. That last one dropped, but... Seven? Yeah. Is that what it said? Seven, eight?
Yeah, I think that was a generous 7-2, to be honest. I think it was closer to 6.
Anyway, you got better. That was the best part.
How do you feel about this comment from Quorum on the stream team saying, weird twist on the shot back then, not a beautiful shooter of the basketball.
Ouch.
No.
Looked like you had to put a little extra oomph into it. Maybe not as confident.
I mean, honestly, like that was looking at that now, I'm like, wow, the core strength just was not there. It was just I was all arms. And that's why a lot of them were just short and wide and off. I mean, it was just all flinging the ball with your arms. That's not the way to shoot. So,
and again, that was not even an NBA 3-point line, which you ultimately did shoot most of them. Maybe the rest of them every time.
The second year in New York was still
college
line. Not NBA anyway. Yeah, college or high school, whatever it was. But
because I had forgotten in pulling that clip, Matt Bonner is on that show.
Oh, yeah.
And we're like, we have him and we're asking him like, what do you think he's gonna do? Like, and he's actually asking, he's like, NBA 3? And we're like, like, I think Tass and I are like, yeah, because that was supposed to be what you were shooting it from. And then this starts playing and then somebody's like, this isn't even an NBA 3. And everybody's getting on you. Got dark real quick, but good stuff.
Yeah,
you got better.
Matt Bonner's a wolf, man. I think he had a wolf on
his
shirt.
He had a wolf shirt.
Am I right?
Yep. Yeah. 100%.
What a shirt. What a shirt that was.
So that's my answer, with the Club Top Shot guys. Talking you up and then that clip playing in the background while I'm literally
the first one that pops up? Well, surely it should be the Steph Curry one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mr. Google's got it in for me. All right.
Yeah, I'll have to ask Jeeves. what do you? Not Jeeves, the guy we play basketball with. The Jeeves guy that runs the internet. Trey, do you have an answer?
Oh, I'm going to look like an idiot pretty soon here because I really want to get a pair of Huarache sandals, which are kind of like, for lack of a better term, like old man strappy sandals. But I'm looking for something that's like, you need a breathable shoe here in Atlanta as it's getting warmer and warmer. You don't want a sweaty foot, which we've talked about many, many times in many an ad read. So I'm looking for something breezy. I want it to be more breathable than a Birkenstock Boston mule, you know, that I wear a lot, that I say it makes my foot look like a bean. Your foot gets very sweaty in those. I also like to wear a loafer in the summer. Your foot gets very sweaty in those, so I need something with air intake ducts. And that will be the Huarache leather sandal. It's going to keep my feet cool, but I know as soon as I put it on, I'm going to look like a 60-year-old man going to a barbecue. Like, I think they will probably ship with a pair of gigantic jean shorts. So, you know, I know I'm going to pull the trigger on them eventually. I'm looking forward to people clowning me for them, but my feet are going to be feeling very cool and classy over the summer.
I like this from Sophie. You know, leather, classic breathability.
Well, that's the thing. I can't just get like a pair. Like, people here are saying, get some Crocs. Come on, dog. You don't think I have Crocs? I can't wear Crocs to, you know, my kid's first day of school. I could, but I'm not gonna. I want to step the game up a little bit here. People are saying, get Tevas. I'm looking for the classy one. I've got all of the, like, the casual stuff handled. I need something that kind of splits the difference between chilling and looking like a straight-up G with the drip.
Right, right. Okay.
Is a Huarache sandal the answer there? I'm not convinced, but there's only one way to find out.
How much do these go for?
You can find them from any sort of price range. We're talking, like, there's some decent ones recommended for $50. Yeah, there we go.
We
I don't know. I would be happy to spend around $100. I'm thinking about getting some that don't even have a heel on them. I don't know. That might be a little bit too laid back. We'll see.
Okay. I can't wait. I mean, I see you wearing these no problem, personally. Like, this feels like a Trey Kirby sandal.
Yeah. Okay, like,
but who knows? I mean, I'm not convinced they're gonna like solve your problem of avoiding sweaty feet. Just because there's a lot of holes in those doesn't mean the bottom is gonna be pretty sweaty, and it is leather. I don't know. We'll see.
We'll
I can't wait to find out. Yeah,
you're gonna look good, man. I think you'll look good.
Okay.
You'll have the drip.
Oh, thanks.
As in sweaty
drip
coming from your feet.
Oh. I don't want that.
No, it'll look good. Those will look good.
Double drip.
Get them. Double drip.
Tass, do you have an answer for a time you tried hyping something up only to be left looking like a fool?
Well, I'm definitely susceptible to advertising and marketing, and since my man Blake Shelton started advertising his new lemonade line, I said, I got to try it. I think I got it in a promoted twit. And I watched the whole video of Blake Shelton going into a cooler and pulling out a lemonade. And you know, I'm into the seltzer game. But I like the ones that taste good. And the Blake Shelton one, he got me. I can't get into his Smithworks lemonade line. His lime lemonade, southern peach. Not for me, Blake. But thank you for the advertising. So I hyped it up to my wife. I said, you can dig this. Like, I hadn't tried it yet, but I had hyped it up. I thought, you know, I'll make this purchase. And nobody liked it, unfortunately. I mean, some of them are better than others. But nope. I'm more of a Cutwater guy. Man, that stuff is good. I am fine advertising that for free. Cutwater. Amazing. You guys talk. Well, there's the Smithworks.
I don't know
there's
why
Blake.
This is killing me. Just the concept of you seeing this photo. You're like, yep, I'm going to try this from Blake Shelton.
Pulling that up, Judy. Blake Shelton, I just believed in him. I just believed that he would make a Southern drink
that would be
perfect for the summer.
That man looks like no one looks more Southern than this guy. And that's where they've tricked you. Yeah.
Yeah, total trick job.
Yep.
You know, they're fine. They can compete with other hard seltzers. There's no doubt. But if you want to get into the Cutwater game, the line that they have, an award-winning line of stuff, vodka mixed drinks, they have a Bloody Mary drink, JD, that you would drink before. Or what's your rule? I don't even know.
He doesn't want to drink after 3 p.m. or something like that. Yeah.
Well, originally it was like noon. No Caesars or Bloody Marys before noon.
Before noon? What are you talking about? That's what.
Yeah, before noon. That's right, Skeets. Before noon, it's a breakfast drink.
Yeah. Oh. So you're saying you can't have it after that? Yeah.
You can't have it. But yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Right. Right. I got distracted.
We're agreeing. You are saying you should only have it in the morning as a breakfast drink. Or I was saying, no, enjoy a Bloody Caesar or a Bloody Mary any time of the day.
Well, I've mellowed in my old age, but after 5 p.m. is absolutely, I will never waver from that. If you cannot, if the sun is still high in the sky, no, you can't. Yes, you have a. If it starts getting like dusky, no, you can't do it. Unacceptable.
I remember a guy used to show up at parties and make Caesars. Yeah, like at a 9 o'clock party.
Are you eating celery at 9 p.m.? these do celery? Look pretty good, though.
This is a good line, no doubt. That's
a good line. These guys know their stuff. Yep. There's a vodka cucumber that tastes sublime. yeah, there's some, you know, it's all about your tongue. But yeah, some that tastes really, really good. The Bloody Mary, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's spicier than I thought it would be, too.
Yeah, thanks, Cutwater. for not sponsoring this podcast.
Yeah. Thanks.
They should be thanking us.
Well, don't worry, Nick. Nick Freeman's going to send this clip to Cutwater. So you never know; we might get some free drinks out of it. But okay. Skeeta, what did you serve me the other day when I was over here?
Oh,
place?
I was just going to bring that up. Y'all were talking about all these like what do you call these type of drinks? Like, what do you like
hard seltzers?
Yeah. Hard seltzer. Yeah.
We stumbled upon one called Long Drink. Hey, to bring it back to the Finnish. It's a Finnish drink. Yeah, Lee, you maybe know about this. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's called Long Drink. And, you know, it's the same idea of a lot of these. They're flavored, but they're tasty, tasty. You liked it, JD. You were a fan.
Loved it. Dangerous, though. They go down a little too easy.
A little too smooth, no doubt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But check them out, Long Drink, if you're of age. And then we can send this clip, Nick. send this to Long Drink a minute prior. Send that to Cutwater.
Yeah. Yeah, just cut water it up and send it to every single... how do you guys feel about me pulling them out of my fridge? Is that too much? Is that going too far? Is that being a little too... over the top and branding.
Well,
just
might help
just,
our chances
just
of
really
getting some free ones. I think
I'm not going. No.
Lee, let's wrap this up. I don't think we got your answer to this question.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys remember this, but when I used to watch The Voice, one time it was Christina, CeeLo, Blake Shelton, actually, and Adam, and they did a version of Def Leppard's Pour Some Sugar on Me, and I watched it live, and I was like, oh my god, that was awesome, and I hyped it up, and I said, you guys have got to check this out next. I think we were still in Toronto. And I pulled it up on my computer, and as I was watching, I was like, oh my god, I don't remember it being this bad, you know. But you guys, I think JD especially, was kind of like, that was good, you thought that was good? And I was like, yeah, I mean, I got caught up in the moment, I thought it was good, but watching it back, it was like, wasn't all that flash, you know. So
the most famous example of you hyping something up was at was it Bar Deuce, Club Deuce, whatever it is in Miami.
Dire
Straits.
And, Dire Straits. This obscure song. Well, obscure for me, but...
Your latest trick. It's a great song.
Oh, man. You were hyping it up. He's like, just wait. It's going to break. This is just after Matt had brought the house down singing Bat Out of Hell, he's saying. And he's, wait, guys. I got even something better. It's going to top that. Oh,
it's
my
really
God. It's like a fucking dirge all of a sudden. Like, it's just like, right, what right. is this? He's wait for it. Oh, here comes the sax. It's like, oh, my God. It was like the worst song you could have picked on the jukebox.
I was going to say it was like when Matt did Bat Out of Hell Meatloaf, he was Vince Carter in the dunk contest, and he was Jerry Stackhouse. Jerry.
Hey, it's a chill song. It's a chill song. But yeah, I missed fight on that one. But
wait for it. That song is called Wait For It, as far as I'm concerned. Been waiting 10 years.
The other answer to this, hyping something up, I actually thought you were going to go there, JD, was Lee when he was talking up his gravy game for Thanksgiving at Tass's old house. And then he's like, I got the gravy. I got the gravy. Guys, I'll nail the gravy. We're like, all right, this guy's very confident in his gravy. And that one didn't go so well either.
Nah, misfired on that one too. That's all right.
Well, but to be fair to Lee, like, the up the gravy. Like, it wasn't, that's not how it was supposed to be, right? Like,
no,
or was
no,
it
was, I don't know what was happening there. The flour was making it a bit too thick, too much water, and it just kept getting thicker and thicker. And I'm like, at what point do I have to pull the pin here and admit defeat? Because I was just kept pouring, it just kept getting bigger and bigger.
Because so like I was of gravy,
I was like, why is it doing this? There's something wrong here with Tass's, you know, oven or his flour. I don't know, maybe he's giving me self-raising flour or something instead. I'm not sure. I was looking for outs, couldn't find any, so I just had to swallow my pride in the end and have some gravy soup. That, which is what I should have said the whole time. No, no, this is how we have it in Australia. It's really thick.
Oh yeah,
you know,
and that would have been
you dip your bread into it and everything.
It's super normal in Australia. This shitty gravy. We serve this at every meal.
Yeah, of course you need a knife and fork to eat it. What do you guys do?
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's call it there. Fun episode of Beach Step In. Keep your questions coming. NBA questions and non-NBA questions alike. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. Tweet them in @NoDunksInc. You can leave them in the YouTube comments below. Join us tomorrow, Thursday morning, I believe. Yes, that's right, for the Daily Show at 10 a.m. Eastern, live game 6 between the Clippers and Suns tonight. And I'm sure we'll talk about some other NBA news. Oh, we got another Canada game on tonight. I'm sure some of you on the show will be very happy to hear me talk about that for 5 minutes. So, tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, live. Subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. What are you laughing about there, JD? You got something good you're going to show
I'm
us?
I was enjoying the gravy talk.
That's okay. It's all gravy. Okay, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, one time we asked Russell Westbrook whether he was a cat or a dog. He said, a dog. I said, what kind of dog? He said, a wolf. But the real wolf is Matt Bonner.
Embrace the day, people.